want to take it where I sovereignty, no posse commentator, they ain't got no apologies. Now everywhere I go, it's like a dark cloud follow me. Got me starting to think that it's hard technology. Now they playing God, trying to change the weather, while we stuck in the matrix, still chained together.
This is quite a picture of the world that Travis Prince is painting here in his tune titled Parents and Teachers. And if we listen carefully, we can learn something about the way he understands himself as an artist, as a musician, and as a painter, as someone who is marking his 10th year as a serious visual artist who is totally dedicated to his art. Early on in the song, Travis Prince proclaims, "I'm going to see if I can make a change for the better." Even though people might think he's crazy for trying, or for the way he is trying. And one of the refrains we hear is, "I'm going to speak the truth until I see some change." And in the song, he doesn't shy away from naming the ills of society. He also mentions the market crash and the matrix and much more along the way. The tune's title, as we said, is Parents and Teachers. And though parents and teachers are sometimes lumped together as authority figures who actually stifle creativity and individual voices, at the heart of this song, there's a section where Prince speaks about the power of education. He sings, "Your education starts in the household. Gotta teach the kids, don't sit and keep your mouth closed. Read to them, sing to them, it helps their mind grow so they have a better chance when they let the dice roll. Everything, internet, hardbacks are old news, but you gotta keep the new mixed with the old school." Ah, yes, hardbacks, books are still important in the age of the internet, and Travis Prince, as we'll hear, is a lover of books. He paints books and portraits, in fact. Paintings by Travis Prince are on exhibit at the Abington Community Library through February, and as part of the Black Scranton Project's exhibit to mark Black History Month at the Marketplace at Steamtown, with a special paint and sip event hosted by Prince there this Tuesday evening. Travis Prince paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about his work and his development as an artist.
I honestly believe that all people, we're all humans, are artists from birth. It's a natural part of being a human is to be creative and expressive. And I figure if you give any toddler a marker or a crayon, they're going to make marks. It's something that's intuitive to us, to make marks and to leave a mark. And I think some people continue marking throughout their life, and some people seem not to enjoy it as much. And I'm one of those people. I've just been marking my entire life. It's always been there for me.
Did you have any guides in your family or any neighborhoods or school?
It's really weird. As far as family, not really. There aren't any really major artists in my family or people who are particularly fond of art. But even early on in school, there wasn't really many influences other than just regular art classes. But when I hit middle school, I met another student, and her art was phenomenal, even in middle school, and I could tell the difference, and that was the first time I actually tried to be better. Up until that point, throughout elementary, it was something natural, and I could draw, and people would always acknowledge that, "Oh, Travis, your stuff looks nice. That's really good." And then I met someone else, and I said, "Well, wait a minute, their stuff looks better than mine." So I really didn't attempt to better, like consciously take an effort to make my art better until about middle school.
Did you look more closely at the world around you? Did that go with it, looking more at things?
I believe so. I think that I've always had a realistic eye for what life and reality is. I can clearly remember some of my earliest drawings in kindergarten, first grade, were not stick figures. Some children don't fully understand perspective, and so at a young age, we normally draw stick figures and round heads and bodies without any shape. But early on, I kind of understood there was a head, a neck, you had shoulders, the body had a thickness to it. And so I was very observant as a child. And once again, in middle school, I think it just kicked it in a little bit harder and wanted to make that better.
When did you get to the point in your life that you were looking at not just another student's work, but maybe looking at art in books or online or in galleries and spaces and things like that? When did you begin to have that kind of interaction with art?
Looking and examining other artists' work, it took years for me to actually begin to do that. I've considered myself an artist my entire life. Always loved to draw, always loved to color, but I did not like the literature part of art, and actually failed art in high school because I didn't understand the different genres, different time periods, all the great artists from the French Renaissance. I just chose not to memorize that and focus on coloring and shading and actually creating art, and not the history or the technical aspect of art. And to be quite honest, I have just recently, maybe within the last 5 years, started to purchase books by Salvador Dali and understand his creative process, and purchased the book of the collective works of Norman Rockwell, and to understand his life and his background, and try to catch up on what I missed out on earlier. So lately I have been reading more about artists and their creative processes.
And you are so distinguished as a portrait artist. There's a real live presence in what you do in your work. You have been drawn to portraiture?
It took me a while to get into portraiture. Early on, comic books were the big thing. And comic books are caricatures of people, which are simple portraits. And so I love to do that for a long time. And I have done many still lifes. I like painting classical still lifes like teapots and fruits and vases and flowers and things like that. So I have several pieces like that. But I think that humans are beautiful. We are just a beautiful, beautiful creation. And our bodies, our faces can show so much expression and tell so much. And one of my favorite sayings is, a picture's worth a thousand words. And if you can capture someone's image just right, you can almost see their whole life story unfold right before you, or capture a glimpse of who they actually are. So I've been drawn to portraiture over the years just because I think humans are beautiful. And I'm not a very geometric thinker. So when it comes to architecture and design like that, and lots of straight lines and buildings, straight lines really don't interest me at all. And the human figure, we're natural. We don't have any straight lines. We're full of curves and we're fluent. And I think that beauty is what I try to express in my art.
Beauty was a word I was going to ask you about. Beauty is so much richer and more complicated than something like pretty, right?
Yes, yes, it is. And in order to capture that, it says, I don't think anything else can compare to the human figure, the human body, the form of a human. And it's who we are. It's what we know the best. And it's one of the most artistic creations of nature there is.
Are eyes important to you, for example, in terms of being the window of the soul? Are there particular facets of a face or the way someone just carries him or herself?
Yes, posture is very important, but like you say, I think the eyes are the most important thing. When I start any drawing, I start from the bridge of the nose and work my way out to the eyes, and that's always the center point. And like you say, the eyes are the windows to the soul. So if you can capture the shape of a person's eyes just right, it's almost like if the rest of the face is a little bit out of proportion, you won't really notice it, because we're drawn to a person's eyes. We recognize people from their eyes. So if the nose is a little bit short, or if the forehead is a little bit too long, it's very hard to notice that as long as you have the eyes proper.
And so that must mean, as a human being, you're a sensitive soul. You work with models, do you?
Yes.
And how do you get that sense of the spirit, the spark of a person?
It is kind of difficult to choose who I photograph. And I normally like to build a rapport with my models first and have like conversations and kind of hang out and maybe have a lunch or something like that, just to converse and get to know each other and make sure that they're right for what I want to use them for. Because just like Norman Rockwell, I try to paint average people, normal, everyday people. And when you approach a normal person and say, hey, would you like to model for me? Their first reaction is, well, I'm not a model. And I say, yes, you are, you know. But the thing is, some people do get nervous in front of the camera. And when you start a photo shoot, they become rigid and try to pose a certain way. And in the end, you can see that they're posing, that it's not natural. And those are the pictures that I don't use sometimes. And I've had models who really can't be natural in front of a camera. They're just really stiff. And so finding someone who has just a really good personality, a really good aura, and is able to ignore the camera is what I actually look for when it comes to choosing models.
Sometimes you show us a lot of skin, a lot of the body and its beauty. Sometimes people are in colorful clothing. It's sort of part of who they are in that way, not like a costume I'm putting on. Mm-hmm. It's part of the whole sense of what's coming through.
Exactly. And that's another aspect is choosing models. When I meet people, it's how they are normally, the way they normally dress, the way they normally act, and the way they normally behave. And that's how you pick up on a real sense of who they are and how you can interpret their aura in such a way that the rest of the world or the viewers of the piece of art will be able to pick up on that same sense of vibration. And sometimes it is important to focus on the background or accessories in the piece, but I still try to make the portrait portion the focal point of the art.
Are there other layers in terms of your art, social layers, things that we can infer from what we see or how you've rendered something that might say something about our time or about who these people are in their milieu?
Definitely. Over the years, I've implemented a little small saying into several pieces of my art, and I try to make it so small that oftentimes I try to make it so small that the viewer has to really examine the piece to even find this little Easter egg. And now this is a very controversial topic. I believe it wholeheartedly, and most people don't. But the events that took place in New York City in 2001 on September 11th, I think was somewhat of a government conspiracy. And so if you look closely at my art, you will sometimes find a saying that I write in there that says, 9/11 was an inside job. And that's kind of a sign of the times of our political situations and the current political atmosphere that we're living in. It's something that I research greatly in depth over the years. And that's just one little small thing that is kind of controversial, but I put it there to spark a conversation. People may believe it, people may not believe it, but it will start a debate if and when someone recognizes that it's there. So that's one small tidbit. Also, I really try to focus on the African-American as being intelligent and beautiful. Historically, blacks in America have been undermined, demeaned, and have been placed at a lesser value than other populations of our society. Sometimes when I'm painting, I do live streams and have live viewers come in and are able to chat with me while I'm working on my art. And one question that I get from viewers quite often is, hey, do you ever paint white people? And I say, sure, but why is that even a question? You know, to ask a black artist who's painting a black person, that why isn't he painting a white person? And my response is that there's tons of white artists who paint white people. They don't really need my help, you know? And I think that there is a lack of the black image in popular art and major galleries and museums, that our presence is not there. And I make a real attempt to fill that void.
It's easy to see a pattern in your work. A lot of your portraits and paintings have books in them, right?
Yes. The portraits with the books is my flagship body of work. It's the first real series that I attempted to put together, and it also makes up the bulk of my work right now. is the Reader Series. And basically, in short, the Reader Series are paintings of African-Americans reading books written by African-Americans, which in itself sounds really simple, a really simple concept. But the more I pondered over it, it's very deep in a sense, because several of these authors that I implement in my pieces, I wasn't even aware of them until my 30s. And one of my well-known pieces is called Chancellor Williams. He wrote a book called The Destruction of Black Civilization. Chancellor Williams is from South Carolina. I'm from South Carolina. And I wasn't made aware of this book until I was 32, 33 years old. And it really struck me hard that an African-American researcher, anywhere between 15 and 17 years, traveled all over Africa and did research, documented research, linguistic research, oral history, written histories, and compiled this extremely fact-based, compelling history of Africa. And I was never made aware of this in my entire educational career. So in order to combat that, I went on a selective reading program for myself, and I delved in and started finding all of these black authors and researchers who have written tons and tons and tons of very informative research papers. And now I try to implement these in the Reader Series to expose everyone else to this part of history that we have not been privy to.
And yet it looks so natural. It's not like you're having your models waving the books. There's a wonderful self-portrait of you reading.
Yes, and that's what I want it to be, just ordinary people discovering something for themselves, not becoming a rabble-rouser or some type of extreme militant. It's just the fact that I think learning is fun, you know, and I attempt to learn something new every day. And when you have access to a wealth of information that you have not had before, it's a learning process, which should be fun. And when you look at these pictures, the individuals seem like they are gaining knowledge. They are becoming aware. And I try to really express that in their posture, their facial features, the positions of the book. And I also try to tell my models for the Reader Series that, yes, you will be in the painting, but you are not the focal point of the painting. The book itself is the actual focal point. So the Reader Series, the portrait portion, the person is more or less a prop that's holding up the book. And the books are the most important things. And I've accumulated a decent sized library of not well-known books, and I'm going to continue to put these in my paintings. The more information I come across, the more information I can share with other people.
What are you holding in that really striking self-portrait? What book is that?
And that is Chancellor Williams, The Destruction of Black Civilization. In the portrait as well, I'm sitting in front of my bookcase, and if you examine the bookcase closely, you can see how the literature is changing from shelf to shelf. The top shelves are filled with well-known European authors and science fiction writers such as Dean Koontz, R.L. Stein with Goosebumps, the Dune series from Frank Herbert, Orson Scott Card's The Ender Game series. But as you slowly go down the shelf, you'll see the Isis papers by Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, the collective writings of Marcus Garvey, Codex Alimentarius by Brandon Turbeville, and several other books that are a far cry different from the top of the shelf. So it's a growth process within in the bookshelf itself.
What about the two artists you mentioned as being of an influence for you?
Oh, yes. Kehinde Wiley and Fahamu Peku are two of the most influential artists for me right now. And everyone kind of knows who Kehinde Wiley is. Last year or the year before last, the Obamas. Well, every president gets to have a presidential portrait painted of themselves for the White House collection. The coolest thing about that is the president gets to choose who they want to paint their portrait. And President Obama chose Kehinde Wiley to do his portrait for him. So it was a really big deal. A lot of people didn't like the painting. I fell in love with it. I thought it was amazing. And that's just how well known Kehinde is a president calls him up, say, hey, you want to paint this picture of me? And Fahamu Peku is another really, really big inspiration for me, for the simple fact they were actually from the same hometown. He's a few years older than me, so he was already out of high school before I got in high school. And he's had a lifelong dream of an artist as well. I've heard stories that he said when he was in high school, he was going to be the next Walt Disney. And he knew it then that he would have a career in art. And so when he graduated from our local high school, he immediately moved to Atlanta and went to art school down there. And he's made a very, very good career for himself. And I came across his work a few years ago, not really knowing anything about him. I just saw some of his artwork and I was amazed that he was able to once again use a portrait to convey such a deep concept that's almost not able to be conveyed with words. And like I said, again, a picture is worth a thousand words, so you would have to explain it so many different ways. But just when you see his art, you understand what he's trying to say to you. And I followed him on social media for about a year, and he made a comment one time that says, "Hey, I'm back home in my hometown of Hartsville." And I said, "Wait a minute, that's where I'm from." And so I reached out to him online and said, "Hey, man, I love your art, and we're from the same town. I think that's amazing." He gave me some really good words of encouragement and motivation. I met him on three different occasions, and he's just a really, really, really nice guy and a phenomenal artist. And there was a show several years ago he had in New York. The title of the show was Black Matter Lives. And I went out there, showed my support, and actually was able to get a photograph of me and him standing in front of one of his paintings. And I turned that into a portrait. And when it was done and I showed it to people online, he was really amazed and he gave me such praise and credit for it.
I noticed in going to his website, there was some allusion to music. How about you and music?
Actually, I have a great love for music. Came up in a Christian household, so my first music was Southern gospel, which is, of course, really soulful and calming. I was born in the 80s, so I came up in the 90s. I think 90s music was really good. We had tons of great music, and I was really into punk rock and hard rock for a while. Love Metallica and different bands like that. And in the early 2000s, I started writing music myself.
Do you listen when you paint?
Yes. Most of the time when I paint, I listen to instrumentals, just instruments and things without actual lyrics. And that's, I'll sit down and make up lyrics in my own head and come up with songs to myself and sing them to myself. And it's like a mental exercise, a brain workout to see if you can string together certain words or patterns. You know, alliteration is something I always like to try to do.
Now, you're going to be doing an event with Black Scranton. How will that take shape?
Yes. Glennis Johns has a pop-up shop at the Steamtown Mall for the Black Scranton Project Expo, and it's been doing really well lately. So on the 26th of this month, we will have a paint and sip where individuals can sign up for a seat, and it will be the 26th from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. And I already have a painting that we're going to be doing. It's a surprise. Some people have seen it, but most people have not. And it's going to be a really fun project. And it's just a simple, fun, colorful painting that we can get done in an hour or so.
Do you have other things lined up? Now, I saw this past week you've been at libraries.
Yes. Yeah, so the month of February has been actually very busy, and I'm grateful for it that so many people invited me to show at so many venues. So this month alone, I'm a part of the Black Scranton Project. I have some work on display at Cafe Adezzo, which is in Scranton. And I have some art on display at the Abington Community Library. And all of these will be up for the remainder of the month of February. I also did an artist talk last night at the community library that went really well. It had a really good time and met some really nice people out there. As far as the upcoming months, I do have one date for May. I will be showing at AFA Gallery, which is in Scranton. And I'll be doing a two-man show with an artist from New York. His name is Brett De Palma. I've never met him personally, but I have looked at his art online, and his stuff is really, really intriguing. And he's one of those classic New York artists with the huge pieces. His pieces are 6 feet by 7 feet, so it's kind of intimidating. But I think at the same time, the juxtaposition between his art and my art will make a great statement and will be very pleasing for the viewers to come out. And like I said, that's in May. Also, I'm talking with Robert Lettieri from Rob Lettieri's Photography out of Scranton, and he has a private gallery, and we may be doing a show over there as well. And I'm currently a part of a team who's putting together an artist talk for ECTV, and it's just a roundtable discussion where it's kind of like a Charlie Rose setup, and I'm Charlie Rose, and I just interview local artists and have them bring their art on and talk about their creative process and what keeps them motivated and things like that. So I have tons of stuff in the works, and 2019 has been off to a really, really good start.
Now, where can people take a look at your work online?
So my name is Travis Prince, and I make paintings. So I normally use the tag Paintings by the Prince. It's really easy to remember, and you can find me on almost all social media at Paintings by the Prince. Also have paintingsbytheprince.com. And if all else fails, I've actually been producing enough lately where you can just Google my name. You can just Google Travis Prince Artist, and a lot of my stuff will pop up that way. For the better, I'm the best thing ever to happen to the movement, cause I'ma use my music to bring the youth in. Roundhouse karate chop the system like Bruce, and every verse I kick, I be spitting the truth. If you trapped in the box, it's because your own doing. I'm out of this world, you better call on Houston.
Artist Travis Prince of Northeastern Pennsylvania, speaking about his work. Paintings by Prince are on exhibit at the Abington Community Library, Grove Street in Clark Summit, through February. And as part of the Black Scranton Project's exhibit to mark Black History Month at the Marketplace at Steamtown in Scranton, the second floor, with a special paint and sip event hosted by Travis Prince there this Tuesday evening at 6:30. For information about the event on Tuesday and to sign up, blackscranton.com, blackscranton.com. That's this Tuesday, February 26th at 6:30 p.m. at the Marketplace at Steamtown as part of the Black Scranton Project's exhibition to mark Black History Month. And for more information, blackscranton.com. We also heard that you can find Travis Prince directly online at paintingsbytheprince.com, paintingsbytheprince.com, or you can just Google Travis Prince Artist. But I'ma speak the truth until I see some change. It's obvious the youth ain't the one to blame, because parents and teachers are one and the same. Your first education starts in the household. Gotta teach the kids, don't sit and keep your mouth closed. Read to them, sing to them, it helps their mind grow, so they have a better chance when they let the dice roll. Everything internet, hardbacks are old news, but you gotta keep the new mixed with the old school. Got a lot of new laws, hope you know the old rules.